And also, I got another great collection of mail here from people who reacted to my Cortlandt Street story, you know, about the radio, surplus radio equipment story. Listen, I can tell you stories of surplus radio equipment that just bore the hell out of you after a while. You don't want to hear any more about that, right? I'll tell you one thing, though, that a friend of mine one time bought a piece of equipment on the surplus market. You know, I'm talking about down in Radio Row. Every major city has a Radio Row. See, I mean, a Radio Row is a place like what could be called, in electronics, it's analogous to automobile junkyards. Wouldn't you say that's pretty analogous? Now, you know, when you go out and buy a car, a piece for your car, you know, say if you need a bumper for your 47 Dodge, well, you don't go to the 47 Dodge bumper store, you don't. What you do is you go down to the junkyard and you wade through 27 million rotting bumpers until finally you come up with a bumper, right? Well, maybe. I mean, but it's exciting to do it. It really is. I love to look for junk like that. And some people, of course, they don't get that excitement. But most normal people with the proper amount of glands do, right? So radio is very similar, electronics. So if you're into electronics, you can go down to Radio Row. And Radio Row is a whole series of little crummy-looking little stores, you know, that years ago probably sold stuff like wedding cakes. And, you know, now all of a sudden it's just arts surplus radio junk store. And you go in there and he's got barrels of stuff all over the place. He's got old turntables. He's got 27 million old pickups and pickup heads. And he's got all kinds of bolts and nuts. And let's put it this way. It's just junk, really junk. Right? Nothing. Junk. And so you go into this radio junk store, and it's just, you're excited. There's a smell. There's a special smell to radio junk stores. It's a Radio Row stores. Now, why is this? Because all the equipment has a certain type of, it's a rich amalgam of all kinds of insulation to begin with. Copper wire, which is in every transformer, has a certain smell, too. You know how copper smells, especially when it's just a wee bit oxidized. And then there's the smell of liquid-filled filter capacitors. Yes, they have liquid in them. In fact, I'll tell you one time, one of the great lessons I learned, buddy, about buying stuff in junkyards. I learned an unbelievable lesson, the radio junk. It was very believable at the time. Now I look back on it, I can see, you know, how feckless is man's life. I was a kid, you know, and I was really into this stuff. And my idea of a fantastic Saturday afternoon was to spend walking up and down through the radio junk shops on the south side of Chicago. These were not no small towns. But this is the real thing, man. And Chicago, among all the cities in America, has a certain gutty quality to it. Even to this day, it remains a city of... Well, a city that, in a sense, Carl Sandburg wrote about. You know, the ball teams are hairy. They don't win, but they're hairy. The fans are hairy. They don't win either, but they're there. And it's Chicago. You know, Chicago, the city of the broad shoulders. And of course, in Chicago, they always said the city of the broad. You'll have to fill that in too. The three-letter word. It's got two S's in it, and. it's just like that. So we used to go down on Saturday and go through all these places. Well, we were always looking for great bargains. It is always assumed, you know, of course, the bargain hunting urge in modern man stems from the original hunting urge in the Neanderthal man. It's a very close parallel. And like everything else that involves hunting, it's dangerous. Well, you know, the Neanderthal man says, you know, turns to his friend Og, you know, and he says, oh, yeah, which says, let's go out and knock over a saber-toothed tiger. Now, it wasn't true that all cavemen, because even in those days, the various strains of humanity were already beginning to develop. It's hard to believe that there were chickens among the cavemen, just like there are chickens today. And so when Og says, which means let's go out and knock off a saber-toothed tiger. Three guys jumped up and says, let's go. And one guy says, I got to sharpen my axe. And and so, you know, he was the chicken. He lived to tell the tale, though. But nevertheless, when Og and his buddies went out there, and they took on the various creatures. Now, don't write me a letter, please. Somebody's going to write me a letter and say, but, Mr. Shepherd, you are showing once again your basic ignorance of prehistoric man. He did not exist at the time of the saber. I know he didn't exist. This is what we call editorial license. Right. Do you understand that, old dummy out there? Literal-minded klutz. I mean, I just see the same guy sitting in the middle of Lenny Bruce's performance. But Eichmann didn't say that. Oh, come on, you clod. So, nevertheless, when Og, you know, went out there to fight the saber-toothed tiger, he was doing the very same thing that people who had the predatory urge deep within them that say, why the hell should I go out and spend $4.95 for a new 8-microfarad filter condenser when I can go down on Radio Row and probably find one for 1/10 the price? And it'll be exciting, right? Well, I'll tell you how exciting it was. You want to hear about it? Now, I this is not a technical story. Now, don't say, oh, another one of those dumb technical stories. Why doesn't he tell a story about when he was a little kid and he said those nice things to his mother? I know that. That crowd. Shut up, will you? Listen, it's life. We're not talking about things technical. We're talking about how you learn about, let's say, the pitfalls that lie ahead on the great golf course of existence. You ever see life as a golf course? Think of it. I just thought of it. Really, really accurate, isn't it? Life is a great golf course, see? There's the fairway. There's the traps. There's the water hazards. Oh, boy, there's the dog legs, right? There's the greens that are slick. Yes, and then there's the guys that know how to play the course. Then there's you down there, knee-deep in the sand, whacking away. Yeah, right. Boy, there's nothing like seeing your fellow player. You know, what makes you so mad about the game of life is we all start out the same, you know. We all start out not able to talk or anything, you know, dribbling and some guys, all of a sudden, without any warning, begin to show that they know how to get that wrist action in that number two iron, you know. Have you noticed that in the game of life? Oh, wow. I mean, it's like Arnold Palmer sinking that 40-foot putt in the Masters. No, I mean, excuse me, not Arnold Palmer, Jack Nicklaus. Oh, what a difference. No, it's Jack Nicklaus. Did you see that putt? Did you see it on the news? It was magic. Oh, 40 feet. A lot of guys I know can't drive 40 feet. I mean, he just sank a 40-foot putt, and it looked so cool doing it. And he just turned around and cried, he goes, ah, like that. Well, that's the way you put that $40,000 check in your jeans. But it's not so much the money, it's the way you do it. Style, incredible. But nevertheless, on this particular Saturday, which I am about to tell you, I learned some of the facts of life. In short, for every saber-toothed tiger you bag, there's one that's going to bag you. You go to the well once too often, as they always say in sports parlance. Yep, well, Doc Medich went to the well once too often. And what happened? That's right, Charlie Spikes teed off on one of his inside sliders and went over the scoreboard. Go on. Well... Hey, have you ever thrown a ball? Have you ever stood out in the outfield? I'm going to ask you a question on that. You know, most people always talk about the pitcher. You know, the whole game is around the pitcher. I'm going to do a baseball show very shortly. In fact, I'm thinking of doing it almost tonight. I've got the urge. But I'll tell you, one of the great moments in sports, one of the depressing moments in sports, really, is to be an infielder and you're standing down there, like in my case, I was down at third base one time, saying I was fooling around down there, and the bases are loaded. And I keep making these moves to this guy, see? And like, we're going to pick him off a third, see? And I keep walking over halfway to the pitcher and saying, come on, cool off, boy, let him hit it. You got a lot of guys behind you here, you know, and walking back, and then you make the move again, and the runner's leading off third. It's in the eighth inning of the game, and you're tied 1-1. It's a desperate ball game, and the bases are loaded with two outs. The pitcher's out there sweating. This is exactly what happened to me. I keep walking over to the third base. You know, I walk off third, and I walk over to the pitcher and say, look, buddy, just take it easy, Punty. You know, she's thrown two balls in a row here. This guy, make him hunt. Make him hunt for it, right? And don't worry, you got an infield eye on you, bud. And I walk back and kick the bag and then go back into the hole and kick some more dirt. And bases loaded, see? And there was a left-handed hitter up, which gave me even added confidence. So he's up there, and he's a left-handed banjo hitter. He's what they call a cracker, you know, you can go on and on. He's a banjo hitter. He's the kind of guy who, in the entire season, the year before, he got two doubles. Both of them hit off the handle and dropped back at a first baseman. So that kind of guy, see, but great glove, but rotten hit. So I walk up to the pitcher again. I said, okay, buddy, you know, this guy, you know. He couldn't hit 185 against his mother pitching. So I go back, kick the bag. What I didn't realize was his mother was Dizzy Dean. You know, I go back and kick the bag. These are moments when you learn something about it. And well, at that point, the pitcher, you know, the pitcher goes into a stretch, see, because this guy kept leading off a 30. And he throws a beautiful pitch. I mean, he really did. He threw a pitch over the outside corner and going away from the hitter and down, hard pitch. And that guy just reaches out, and he meets that ball, and he hit a shot down the third baseline that not only knocked me flat, it went out into left field, and three runs scored while I'm laying there looking up at the clouds. And he walks over to me, the pitcher, and he says, yeah, let him hit it. I says, what do you mean? He had me handcuffed. Walks back, spits on my shoe, and goes back to the mound. Well, you know, these things, you take life as it comes. And when you played a little infield in your time, you learn that, you know, sometimes you make the tag, other times you get spiked. So on this particular Saturday, I was still idealistic, my eyes shining bright. And I believed that God was in his heaven and nature was benevolent. This is what a lot of people believe until a shark gets them. You know, nature was benevolent. So I got a hold of Schwartz and Flick, and we went down, the three of us. We were all into the electronics bag at that time. I must say, I'm the only one, you know, that I felt really knew about it. See, but the other guys were there. So we went down to Radio Road, and we borrowed Flick's old man's Chrysler. He had this rotten old Chrysler. He had a Chrysler that was sort of dun colored, you know, the paint was kind of dun and just peeling off. We drove down to the south side of Chicago, parked the car in his parking lot, and we started to make the scene on Radio Row, which was on South State Street in those days. It was like Van Cortlandt Street. They had 1,000 little shops all in a row. And we knew all these guys. There was the Greek, and there was Artie, and then there were places that didn't have the names of guys like Ajax Electronics. They had names like that. Acme Radio Parts. They all love names. You notice that so many companies start their name with an A because they figure they want to get in the front of the listings, you know, in the yellow book, way down in the bottom. You know, a guy does not say Zabisco Brake Lining Company. He wants to be right up there with the Acme, the AAA, the ABC Brake Lining Company. So anyway, all these places have names like Acme, Ajax, A1. That was another great one. And we're in and out of all these places. And there were always these little greasy guys with heavy beards and, you know, shirts open all the way down to the navel, looking mad and loading junk and stuff. And you can smell a great, exciting smell of a radio store on a Saturday afternoon in spring. It's a sexual, it's an exciting smell. You smell that insulation and all that Bakelite and that tubing, and it's just a great smell. The dust and the mold, and all of it mixes together to make an amalgam of smells that is as distinct as the smell of, say, a locker room, which is always the same. If you go into a locker room in Tehran, you know, where some guys have been playing football or something, it smells exactly like a locker room in Trenton. Yeah, it's a basic smell. So the basic smell of a Radio Row junk shop. Now, I'm not talking about going into Harvey's over here. I'm not talking about going into Lafayette. I'm talking about a junk shop where they've got this stuff all in bushel baskets, and they have a little sign. Anything in this basket, 7 cents. and there's a whole pile of junk, you know, with all kinds of leads and resistor wires sticking out. That's the kind of place I'm talking about. Well, we went into this place, and there was the specific thing I was looking for. Now, I was building a power supply. Now, I had gotten myself a power transformer that was a hefty piece of equipment. It was a Thordarson transformer. Did you ever hear of Thordarson or Thorderson, if you prefer it that way? Thordarson, right, that's a good transformer. And I had gotten myself judicious trading by promising to go into slavery for 2 years to a guy. You know, do all kinds of stuff. I got this Thordarson transformer that was 250 mils at 750 volts on each side of the center tap. Now, that's a 1,500-volt transformer, correct? And it was 110-volt, good, solid, 250-mil transformer. It had a 6.3-volt winding on it for filaments. And it was a lot of transformer. It had, yes, I was very proud of it. And I used to take it out and just heft it in my hand. Took two hands to do it, but I had built up, and I almost finished with this thing. I had built up a power supply. Now, this is, again, as I say, it's a 250 mils. It's 750 volts on each side of the tap. So that's a good, hefty power supply. It gave DC voltage, roughly 650 volts, filtered, sure, ultimately. That's a lot of voltage. And I had got myself a sister filter choke, you know, big choke in this thing. Now, what I needed, and I had spent my last nickel, buddy, my last nickel on some 1,000-volt filter condensers for this thing. They were oil bath condensers. They were good condensers. They were big filter condensers. I had 2 4-microfarad filter condensers of roughly, I think they were 1,000 working volts. Correct, Emo? Okay. You got it. No, they were 750 working volts. It was pretty much on the edge, see. But if I was going up to the 1,000 working volts, it was going to cost me some dough. So I bought these beautiful oil bath filters. Now, I had the thing all built up, but I needed one thing. What did I need? Now, I was using, I'm asking you a technical question. If you're curious what kind of rectification I was using in it, I was using a pair of 866 juniors. These are a mercury rectifier tube, half-wave rectifier, and I was using a pair to give full-wave rectification. So here I am. I've got my whole life is built on this equipment. I have put every cent that I've earned on my paper route. I've put every cent that I've earned on my lawn cutting business. I have invested my entire income from my worm raising racket. I have put it all in this thing. There's a, you know, this is going to be power. So I go to Radio Row. Now, there's a lesson in this for you, friends. Yes, indeed. I go to Radio Row, and there was one piece of equipment I needed for this power supply. And what was it, Barney? I've described everything. I had the 866s. I had the power transformer. I had the filter choke, and I had the filter condensers. What did I need? Well, you know, I had all the other little stuff like wiring and that. What else did I need? I had the chassis. No. It was ready to go except for one important piece of gear. All right, I'll tell you what I needed. I needed a great big fat bleeder resistor to give it what we call voltage regulation. Right. Now, that's a great big wire-wound resistor that is used in a power supply of this kind. I don't want to bore you with these technical aspects of this highly technical career. But nevertheless, I went down to Radio Row to pick up this 50,000-ohm, 250-watt or 500-watt or whatever it was, a 250-watt big, fat wire-wound. And it was covered with porcelain, you recall. I had these things covered with porcelain, big resistor. So I'm down there going from one radio shop to the next. And I finally come to Old Arts. See, he was the guy that, when all else failed, you went to Arts. He had all kinds of stuff. And he had a connection with some big radio company where he would buy all their parts, apparently, you know, from chassis they rejected and everything. He had a fantastic place. Bins full of stuff. He had bushel baskets. So I go into Art's and I said, Art, I'm looking for a 50,000 ohm, 250-watt bleeder resistor. I'm looking for something, maybe an Ohmite. You know, if you got anything by Ohmite around. So I got just the thing. So he runs in the back and he comes out with an array of magnificent filter, magnificent bleeder resistors. See, he's got them. I says, here, he says, I says, how much, Art? Now, of course, if I were to go down to Allied to buy this thing, it's going to cost me a nice penny. And the lesson, of course, here is, friends, I'm not going to tell you the lesson. I'll just tell you the story, right? Let you have the lesson. So, now, it wasn't really that much. If I had gone down to Allied, I might have been able, or to Lafayette, I might have been able to pick up this resistor for maybe $3, something like that, which was a lot of money, but not that much when you stop to think of what else was involved in this power supply, the 866 Juniors alone. So I said to Art, how much is the resistor, Art? That's 50,000 watt or 50,000 ohm. Ohmite, this is a pretty good-looking resistor. So he says, hey, bring out the voltmeter, will you, Maury? So Maury's in the back. Maury brings it out. He checks. He's fine. He says, well, he says, I think I'll let you have that for, I'll let you have it for $1.75. I says, come on, Art, what do you mean? I can buy one down at Allied, Radio Shack, or someplace like that. I can get one of those for $3. He says, well, why don't you go down? Go ahead, be my guest. It was the way Art always talked. Be my guest was his favorite thing. So he says, be my guest, go, you know. I says, okay, Art, this is a little game we had. I'd start to walk out. He says, look, he's all right, you're an old customer. Okay. He says, buck and a half. I says, all right, come on. I'll buy it $1. $1 on a barrel head. $1. $1. Oh, he says, are you kidding? I pay more than that for it. Come on. How are you? Who are you there, yeah? This is a kind of talk you get from those guys. I said, well, all right, you know, I said, after all, I can go down right down to Allied, and I know I can get one there for $3. Yeah, well, go up, be my guest. I said, okay, all right, I'll be your guest. Right, okay, come on, let's go, Flick. So we start to go out. He's buck and a quarter. You're a good customer. You come here every week, buck and a quarter. I said, okay, I'm not going to quill over pennies. Okay, so I gave him the buck and a quarter, which left me 7 cents for the rest of my life. And I take the resistor out, and it came even in a box. That's what what really got me. It came in a box. So I take the thing home that day. We drive back. Flick buys himself a couple of pieces of stuff. And Schwartz picked up a couple of low-loss coil forms. He was always winding coils. So we get back to the house, and I rush into the basement, and I go to work on my power supply, and I lay that bleeder resistor in there. And about an hour later, I am tuning up my transmitter. I'm a ham. I'm tuning it up with my new power supply, and oh, wow. I mean, you know, I had this T20. For those of you who don't know anything about that tube, I actually had a TZ20, which is a zero-bias triode Taylor tube, and it was, boy, and I've been, the voltage is right up there. I'm getting 650 volts, and I'm on CW's, and the meters are flicking, and the 866 Juniors are flickering. Everything's working fine. So I go on the air. I tune it all up on 20, on the low end of 20 CW. Well, 5 minutes later, I'm in QSO with some guy out in Denver. On 20 CW, and he comes back. Oh, you know, I'm getting great reports. 589X. Denver, you know, I says, he tells me his name is Ted. So I come back, and just as I come back, I said, and I paused for a second. As I paused, I lifted the key up. As you all know, with your great knowledge of electronics. You all realize, of course, with no load, the voltage goes up, correct? Slightly. Now, the whole point is you have to have good regulation so it doesn't go up too much, nor drop too much. When you, well, I raise the key like that, and just as I raise the key, how much time do we have? 30 seconds! Holy smokes! Your whole life is poured into 30 seconds. I raise the key. A little echo chamber would not be amiss here. I raise the key, not yet, Barney. I raise the key, and as I raise the key, just for a second, suddenly there was a sound. It just went boom! Just like that. It was a fantastic thing. I sat stunned. I mean, my mother came running in from the kitchen. She said, what'd you do now? What'd you do now? I knew you'd get a shock. What'd you do now? And it blew the tops right off my filter condensers. I mean, my resistor went out. The voltage rose, blew the tops off my filter condensers, and all over the ceiling of my bedroom was the oil from the filter. It blew my filter condensers. Just, you never saw anything like it. The tops came right off. Pow! Just like that. The oil went all over the ceiling. Have you ever seen anything like that, Barney? Fantastic. Well, I might say that each one of these filter condensers ran about 4 bananas apiece. All right, that was $8, right, for starters. One of them shorted, which incidentally didn't do the transformer any good. It reflected back on the H-66s. One H-66, friends, as far as I know, is still in orbit. It came right out of the tube socket, right out the window, and the last I saw it was going out over East Chicago, Indiana, heading towards Lake Huron. Lousy dollar and a quarter. Radio parts junk shop special. And 2 weeks later, you know, but incidentally, my shirt caught on fire. 2 weeks later, I go into Art's and I says, Art, you don't know what you did. Look, you blew up all my power supply. He says, you could have gone there, Art. Be my guest. Be my guest. Be my guest, friends. Yeah. So be careful, buddy. Watch out for those discount bins. There's a reason, huh? Right. Maybe you live a discount life and it doesn't make any difference, huh? Spend all of your time down there in the water hole, flailing away. Yes, with a number 5 iron with a balsa wood shaft. No talent, but plenty of moxie, huh? Right.
By recording from New York, you've been listening to Inside Gene Shepherd. Our next Shepherd program can be heard Tuesday at 6:30.
This is Washington's non-commercial, listener-supported radio service, WETA-FM 90.9 on your dial.
At 8 minutes after 7 o'clock, our temperature is 93 degrees. Our